Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio this fine afternoon in August 2017. I'm having my constitutional. I'm going to take a fast walk up to the city centre and sit in a cafe for 15 or 20 minutes when my way home. Fully exercised. I'm on a bit of a fitness drive at the moment with the walking. Long walks every day if possible, and as many ascents on British mountains as I can manage, as I'm planning a trip up Eryri Fawr sometime in the next few days. So just oiling the legs up here, some fast walking. Use it or lose it, chaps. Anyway, my topic is trust. This is a huge topic, and it was brought up by a friend of mine who likes to discuss interesting, intriguing and difficult matters. My first thought was, what a huge topic. Of course, most topics are huge, aren't they? when you start digging down. But this one, it certainly has got ramifications for macrocosmic thought, you might say. Thought about society, thought about human communities, thought about exchange, trade, so forth. Thought about politics, social organisation, economics, so on. It's just like your human life in the collective is shot through with issues of trust and lack of trust, of course. It's also a personal matter. And I think my friend was asking the question on that sort of level. And it's very interesting there, again. And now, obviously, these two levels, you might say, you know, the individual and the collective, are going to be tangled up together in any thinking we try to do about trust. Okay, what is it? And is it important, and if so, why? A way in. It's just a naive question. Like, what do I mean when I say to somebody, I trust you? As I'm handing over the packet of money, which they're going to take away and do something with on my behalf. I trust you. What's it mean? What's going on? When you say you trust somebody, you're telling them that you fully expect that they will deliver on a promise or an undertaking. Or something rather more general, that you find their behaviour in general and across different concerns and different matters to be trustworthy. Okay, that's a little bit tautological, so what do we mean? It does mean that we know what to expect of somebody, that we have sufficient acquaintance with their character to know what to expect, what they will do. You could even actually like trust somebody to be treacherous, in a sense, if that's what they do habitually. You can say, well, I have full trust that the outcome of this transaction will be such and such, that X will betray Y, because that's what you've observed. Now to see what's going on, there is observation of character and behaviour. And on that basis, making predictions about future behaviour, whether it's to do with a specific issue, like transferring some money. Like, you trust the solicitor, don't you? You know, when you buy a house or sell a house. Not to rob you. Not to do some swindle on you. Even, of course, they do occasionally do that. So we've got this... We've got some key notions in place. We've got predictability. We've got character and behaviour. And we've got expectation. And expectation of outcomes of transactions. Now, this thing when you say, I trust you, of course, this one thing that's emerging now is that when you say something like, I trust you, that you can say this meaningfully with respect to a particular transaction, taking the money, doing the deal on your behalf, etc. You trust that the person will behave in a certain way and a certain scrupulous way. But on the other hand, you can say to somebody, I trust you, and what you're talking about is you're saying, in my judgment, in my estimation, maybe in my intuition, that you're somebody who won't hurt me, at least not deliberately. You hear this saying, I trust him with my life. I would trust him with my life. It's a conditional. I would trust him with my life. And this is a comment about somebody's character, you know, that they are so unlikely to behave in a way that towards you that damages you, that you would, in a life and death situation, feel as safe as you could if the outcome of some events depended on that person, the person you trust. Now, I see a number of conundrums jumping out straight away. The first thing that's poking me in the eye about this is the matter of character versus behaviour. And we get the whole philosophical question around behaviourism suddenly jumps in. Is it the behaviour we judge because it's observable? Or is it character that we attempt to descry, even though it's not directly observable? It's only observable through the behaviour that the character gives rise to. But hang on a minute. Couldn't you meet a stranger? Maybe you go to a gathering of like-minded people, and there's some people there you've never met, and you introduce yourself to one of them. It's the grand meeting of... How do? So it's the grand meeting of cryptocurrency anarcho-ecologists, and they're having their convention in Rotterdam. And there are these people, you know, they come from a similar camp to you, so you've got a little bit of an idea of where they're at. But basically, you don't know them from Adam besides that. And you strike up a conversation with somebody. And you can actually, I think, trust them almost straight away on the basis of the way they look. You know, we read people, you know, people read people all the time. Not necessarily that consciously, but you do. You have an intimation. Similarly, I'm sure you've been in the situation whereby you've met somebody, you've had a few words with them, they seem quite friendly and attractive and all that stuff, but you just don't trust them straight away. Now, we have to deal with that as well. And I don't really think this is behaviourism. And I do think that in certain cases, that kind of intuition can be quite finely honed. And it can be quite trustworthy, even though we're not doing any quantification exercises, measuring behaviour, counting the number of times somebody does X under stimulus Y, in the manner of the old-fashioned behaviourism of Skinner and Watson. Arthur Koestler had a good joke about this. He called it that it was based on the idea of ratomorphic man, because behavioural psychologists, and it was all the rage in the 50s, 60s, actually took a philosophical stance, saying that subjectivity didn't even exist, or it was scientifically irrelevant because not observable directly in the public domain. And they insisted that psychology abandon psychoanalysis with all of its presuppositions and just so stories about what's going on inside people. You forget that. You just observe behaviour, measure it. It's measurable, observable. And that would give us some reliable knowledge about human beings. Of course, most of the experiments they did were on rats and pigeons and so forth. There's actually a good joke about that. So, and I'll tell it to you. Two behaviourists made love. One said to the other, "It was wonderful for you. How was it for me?" And I think that joke actually explodes behaviourism pretty well conclusively. Plus, it's not actually what kind of goes on with human beings. Anyway, trust. You can see behaviourism versus character. Well, I think in the real world situation, we end up using both of these things we do. If somebody rips you off, and you forgive them, and then you do some more business with the person, and they rip you off again, you kind of tend to say to yourself that I'm not doing business with them again, because that behaviour will almost certainly repeat itself. And even on the basis of a couple of instances, you'll draw a conclusion. Now, in science, you need to have more than a couple of instances in a scientific experiment, a quantifiable. When you were dealing with some kind of quantification and mathematical description, you want a few more instances than that before drawing conclusions. Yet this is what we would do in life. Similarly, you might hang around with somebody for a long time. You might have common interests. You might be lovers or whatever. When you spend time with somebody, and you actually form an internal presence of that person, if you like, an image, or an appraisal of character is another way of putting this. And it's a very complex process, because what you do is you build up a picture out of lots and lots of disparate elements. And actually, there might not be that much repetitive behaviour. From which to draw behaviourist kind of type of conclusions about the person. You get lots and lots of disparate bits of information. And yet together they form an impression of the character. And it's on the basis of this picture of somebody, this appraisal of character, that you decide whether to trust or not, or whether to trust in some instances but not in others. There might be somebody you'd trust with your life in a dangerous situation. On the other hand, you might not trust that person with money, or vice versa. In these kind of situations, trusting somebody is a leap of faith, it seems to me. Even though it's a slightly educated leap of faith if you've hung around with the person, if you know them, if you've spent time with them, if you've observed behaviours, yes, but also if you've, in a sense, tasted many different aspects of that person's personality. Now, I'm going to say trust is a good thing. It's a great thing. Human society works because there's enough trust for it to work. Over and against this, a general observation might be that people are untrustworthy. And that there's a limit to everybody's trust, perhaps. Maybe when push comes to shove, they will betray. And we hear these arguments with respect to torture, particularly by the French existentialists, always interested in analysing torture, which of course might have had something to do with the formulation of existentialist ideas during the Nazi occupation of France in the Second World War in the 1940s.
Thank you.
And you can see at some point almost everybody would crack and give the Gestapo the names and addresses, which is why, of course, the resistance had a cell system, so that every member of the resistance only had a limited amount of information. So there's a limit to trust. However trustworthy somebody is, there's a limit to how much trust they can offer. Now, I've heard it said, never trust anybody. I heard another friend of mine saying that, never trust anybody. And I suppose that is actually the sane advice. My strategy is to trust pretty well everybody, unless they're really obviously untrustworthy. But expect to be screwed over at some point, and deal with it when it happens. But don't be hostage to fortune, with the possibility of really, really serious consequences. Just be self-reliant when it comes to stuff that really, really matters, as much as you can. But psychologically, just trust everybody, you know, and see how soon they stick the knife in. Suppose my experience is that most people do at some point. I say we'll deal with it when it happens. Because going through life not trusting anybody at all, strikes me as just barren, really, and barren of the possibilities of human interaction, which are actually pretty glorious, pretty wonderful. You will have the best experiences of your life with others if you're an ordinary sort of person. So I think the don't trust advice is the sanest, but the worst. I've even heard the spiritual instruction that contains the advice, don't trust anybody. In fact, my friend who believes that, he's an ardent meditator. He says, don't trust anybody. And you see it in Tilopa's Mahamudra. There's a commentary on that somewhere. I forget the name of the commentator, but a venerable and respected commentator on tantric meditation in the Tibetan tradition. Saying of the Mahamudra that it implies that you don't trust anybody, and I find it kind of a bit stark that this religion of compassion actually also gives you this sane advice: don't trust anybody. And I think it's a bit of a misstep on the part of that commentator. And what we're hearing there really is asceticism. Asceticism always tells you to isolate yourself. Not be hostage to fortune anyway. With a desideratum of achieving a siddha-like state, in other words, a state of complete independence and self-reliance and isolation, really. I think asceticism in general does go in the wrong direction. Life's for living. And all the glorious things in life are grist to your mill. If you're a meditator and a questioner. Now there's an interesting story in Wittgenstein's writings, and I don't recall exactly in which one of the posthumous writings it's in this story, but I'm going to tell it you. And obviously this isn't verbatim, I don't have the text in front of me. But Wittgenstein asks us to imagine a society, not our own society, just a society, where there's a certain faction of people who have the habit of lying down in the road and writhing and twitching and asking all the passers-by to help them, because they're in a bad way, and yet they're in the habit of grabbing anybody who tries to help them and robbing them. It's a ploy in order to rob. And so eventually, in the society, because of this behaviour, this faction, that really there's just high levels of distrust amongst people.
Yeah.
All right. And Wittgenstein just leaves it at that. Just like this, there's no conclusions, no moralising, no attempt to dig out some ethical generality. So he just tells it and just leaves it there, which is rather marvellous. And I think what's going on there with Wittgenstein is that he's actually talking about us, about our society, about our culture of distrust, which everything has to be hedged around with contracts, and lawyers always make a profit, whatever the stage of the rest of the economy, and human interaction gets reduced to legality more and more and more. And we get more and more bureaucracy and rules and regulations because people no longer trust. And because they no longer trust, they can't be trusted either. And it started with contracts of some sort. Just like the people lying in the road, in order to capture well-meaning passers-by. And it's a story that says, don't be like the Good Samaritan. Because that guy lying there who's supposedly be beaten up by robbers might just turn on you. After all, why is it that we have to expect people to be untrustworthy as a default state, rather than expecting them to be trustworthy as a default state? Well, it strikes me that there's some cultural work needed doing, and big style. Now, I know the defence of suspicion, generalised suspicion, or the type I'm talking about, would be to say, well, get real, be realistic, people are selfish. And of course, this is the root idea about what human beings are like that underpins the economic theories that organise our economy and our governmental systems. They're based on the idea that the Homo economicus, which I spoke about before, is just simply somebody who pursues his self-interest and attempts to maximise it. That's it, game theory. So this idea of what human beings are like is right at the core of our social organisation, particularly the economic aspects and the legal aspects and the governmental aspects. But of course, these are huge aspects of social life that determine so many features of our life and the tone of our lives. So right at the core, we've got the notion that people are untrustworthy. So it's of little surprise that when this vision of the human being filters out into the culture at large through these major institutions, that we end up being a pretty suspicious bunch and an untrustworthy bunch. We're told that it's okay to be untrustworthy. So as well as just keeping promises, which as Nietzsche points out is the unit of social intercourse, particularly when it comes to trade and the economic side of things, has to be enforced through contracts and the threat of penalties. The pound of flesh, I might add, is the paradigm case. If you know your Merchant of Venice. In place of that fundamental notion of the human being, I would want to say that human beings are intrinsically compassionate, intrinsically loving, intrinsically awake, intrinsically clear, intrinsically sensitive to others, and that these features have to be knocked out of human beings. This is why we spend 20 odd years educating our citizens. We have to knock all this hippie shit out of them, because naturally they would just simply imbibe it and live it. And we have to inculcate them with the culture of distrust and suspicion, at the same time trying to get them to keep their promises, but of course, as I mentioned, with a system of reward and punishment. Now, Nietzsche actually thought that we had to be trained to keep promises. He called it the mnemotechnics of pain, and that painful initiations and so forth served the function of traumatising an individual so that they're able to remember that they made a promise, because intrinsically we don't remember that well. Memory is a cultivation of culture. And of course, memory is intrinsic to promising. It's also intrinsic to trusting. Memory being the impression of someone's behaviours and someone's character upon our psyches that we draw upon when we decide to trust them or not. Whether that decision making is instinctive or simply calculative. The objection to the hippie shit, which says that people are okay and trustworthy and it's a good thing to trust, on the basis of realism, is, I think, contradicted by the existence of societies with higher trust, degrees of mutual trust among citizens than ours, and less reliance on contracts and religious and legal sanctions, rewards and punishments than ours. And they do exist and they're documented. Obviously they're getting fewer and further between, given the relentless march of corporate consumer capitalism, which basically is, in all of its actions, is propagating distrust, actually as a means of organising a society and controlling a society. Get people to distrust each other at the outset and you've got a society you can control. When people trust each other, you have solidarity. You have dangerous solidarity, politically speaking. Now, I suspect that my friend will be listening to this and thinking, here he goes again, globalising everything. Where is the consideration of this matter on the personal level? And I'm pretty sure that a lot of people are more interested in that as an aspect of trust. Than in all this political mumbo jumbo. So let's have a quick look at what it is to trust somebody. Let's get it into this kind of personal dyad. Person A relating to person B. Person B trusts person A. Person A doesn't trust person B. It's an interesting scenario. Of course, it's a real one. We can have that person. We can also have person A doesn't trust person B, and person B doesn't trust person A as well. And the third scenario is that A and B trust each other. There's a high degree of solidarity. And you would expect that of people who have deep bonds of friendship or love. Maybe partners, marriage partners, parents of the same children, these kind of things that bind people together. Maybe people that have undertaken some kind of task or enterprise together, like members of a band, or people who've partnered up to develop an invention or whatever. They have all these types of relationships. And you expect trust in those. And it kind of comes natural. And it feels good. And you know that the person is trustworthy, that they'll do what they say they're going to do. Or if they're not very good at that, at least you'll know that that is a part of their character, you know, that they kind of spout off saying they're going to do X, Y and Z but end up doing none of that. So you know that about them, you can still trust them. As long as you know what it is that they do, that is predictable and reliable. So imagine the situation in which persons A and B have been trusting each other for some decades. And then something happens to person A. Maybe they get some kind of brain disease. And it comes out of the blue. And one day they do something completely out of character. And think that this would indicate like the actual limits of trust. And the limits of trust are not in character failings of people. The ultimate limits, I mean, some short-term limits, I suppose. You can see that their character failure will place a limit. But the limit is that human beings, are, at the end of the day, given their biological nature, are going to be, at some point, unpredictable, possibly. In other words, we can't inscribe into our estimation of the human character, of the nature of human beings, that they will always be predictable at their best. Even at their very best, character-wise, the possibility of something unpredictable occurring is always there. So in trusting, I think you have to be aware of that. You know, that there is an intrinsic limit, just simply placed on the organic nature of being a human animal. So if we're trying to get at some kind of wise policy here for knowing when and how to trust others, I think the first thing you've got to take on board is that there is an intrinsic limit. And I think it's on this basis that we, again, We catch sight of the way in which trusting is a leap of faith. Anyway, I'm on the main road now, so I'm going to stop.